Good morning, everyone. I'd like to begin just by expressing a karasa tov, I think, on behalf of all of us, to the coordinators of this event, particularly to Rebbetzin Judy Steinig and the National Council of Young Israel, and whoever else was involved in helping her to coordinate and organize this important conference. Some people are skeptical about conferences. They say conferences don't solve the problem. And while it is true that big problems, big issues, do not usually meet with complete and total solutions, but nevertheless, the increased awareness and the greater focus and contemplation of the issues that will be brought about as a result of this conference will no doubt bring greater results. And I am confident that there will be insights gained today which will help people avoid pitfalls and in a positive sense help people pursue their goals more expeditiously and with greater success, and I'm sure that there will be inspiration transmitted today which will bring about a greater sense of community, of helping those in need, and for all of those reasons, this conference will benefit the Jewish community in a very real sense, and therefore it behooves us to express our Hakara Satov, and of course also to Rabbi Mintz and Lincoln Square Synagogue for providing their beautiful Beis Knesses for this function. Okay. Our topic this morning is bridging the gap, developing mutual empathy between singles and marrieds. Rabbi Ruchem Levavitz, who was the Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide of the great Mir Yeshiva in Poland, was one of the great, great Bali Musar, great ethicists, and raised many students who became great, great people. So there's once a story with him. He was walking down the street, and a man stopped him, a man whom he knew stopped him, and said, "Rebbe, how many times did you roll over back and forth? How many times did you toss and turn until you finally fell asleep last night?" Rabbi Ruchem was astounded by the question. I mean, don't get me wrong, rabbis get some strange questions sometimes, but this one took the cake. And he didn't know what to say. And the man explained himself. He said, "Rebbe, I went to visit someone who was ill yesterday, and I saw the person couldn't move, couldn't roll over. All of us, when we want to fall asleep, we position ourselves this way and that way and this way until we're finally comfortable and we doze off. This person who was ill, aside from all the other difficulties of being ill, couldn't move, couldn't adjust his position in his bed." And just picture that particular stress, that frustration of not being able to become comfortable in the bed in which one lies. And Rabbi Ruchem, in a shmuz, in a sicha, in one of his lectures that he gave to his students, said, "I learned a great lesson from this man. I learned that when we try to relate to somebody who has a disability or somebody who has a problem, it's not enough to say, 'Oh, Nebuch, how terrible, this person has X or Y problem.' We have to consider our own lives, what we experience on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, a monthly, what we experience in our own lives, and consider what would it be like if I were in that person's shoes." That is empathy, to put ourselves in another person's shoes and consider hour by hour, day by day, what another person experiences. And if we don't do that, we miss important points. There is a phenomenon that's developed within our community, and I think I've witnessed it myself to a great degree. There seems to be, in certain instances, a distance between married people and their single friends. I actually just had a call this past Wednesday. A girl called me up and was bemoaning the fact that a relative of hers was not sensitive to the challenges of being single, and it wasn't because I was speaking here on this topic. She had no idea. She's living in a different community, and I've seen it time and again, and this has even gotten attention in Jewish Orthodox journals and publications. I have here an article from a Jewish Orthodox monthly publication which has readerships in the tens of thousands. It's from September of 1999, and this is an article called An Open Letter to My Single Friends. This is an apocryphal letter, I assume it's apocryphal, maybe it's not, written by a Kala during her Sheva Brachos, explaining to her friends that she will not abandon them. She starts off thanking them for coming to the wedding and so on, and she writes, "I'm writing to you now to reassure you that I will not abandon you or allow our friendship to dissolve. Why should I be different from all the rest, you may wonder? The answer is that I cannot forget how hurt I was when my married friends drifted away from me, and I simply will not allow myself to do that to you. At first they moved away to another city or neighborhood, promising to keep in touch. Then they returned only one out of every three calls I made to them. I tried to be done lekav schus, I tried to judge them favorably, telling myself they are so busy with new apartment, husband, and responsibilities, so I kept initiating calls 3 or 4 times for every 1 time they called me. Eventually, my messages were not returned at all. When we did speak, the conversation always turned to husbands and babies. That is their life now, and I fully understand. And she goes on to say how she will not allow herself to do that to her friends. She ends the letter, just because I'm celebrating my 1 week anniversary in another 2 days doesn't mean I've forgotten what it's like to be single. Finally, you're just married friend. I'm not sure what that last paragraph meant, but in any event, the fact that such an article could be written and published is certainly indicative of is reflective of a situation that exists in our community and is worthy certainly of our attention. And in order to really sympathize and empathize with other people, we have to put ourselves in their shoes. We have to ask ourselves, how many times did I roll over last night before I fell asleep? And the reason why it's difficult to do that is because we don't exist in other people's shoes. We see things through the lenses of our own eyes, and we never have the opportunity to be somebody else, and it's therefore very difficult to imagine what another person experiences. I'll tell you an experience that I had just a couple of months ago in front of our own shul, in front of our tzedek, OZ, on a Friday night. For those who don't come from the west side, in front of OZ on a Friday night, you have probably the largest gathering of Jewish modern Orthodox singles maybe anywhere in the world at that time of week, certainly. And as an assistant rabbi in the shul, I go out and I greet people, ask people how they're doing. Oh, just passed the bar, congratulations. This one has her brother visiting from South Africa. Nice to meet you. How's everything? Chit-chat, it's a very, very pleasant experience. I greet all the people I haven't seen all week, or some of them I haven't seen all week. It's very, very pleasant. I usually end up spending about half an hour, 45 minutes just greeting various people before I go home. What a wonderful way to start your Shabbos. Everybody talks nicely to you. I try to talk nicely to everyone else. It's a very, very pleasant experience. I've had people visit the shul and say, wow, this is so wonderful. Everybody must be so happy. Such a wonderful gathering of young Jewish people. But there's another perspective on it. And I was always aware of it and became acutely aware of it a couple of months ago. I went out and did my greeting of various people. I said good Shabbos to a certain girl whom I know from the shul, greeted her, and she said, oh, and this is my friend so-and-so. She introduced me to someone who was standing next to her whom I did not recognize. And I started to talk to her. What's your name? What do you do? Different questions by Jewish geography, people with the same last name, who I know she's not related to anyway, but ask anyway, right? After about 10 seconds, she became stone cold. Started very clearly indicating that she did not want to continue this conversation. I'd never had such an experience before. And I tried to continue the conversation nicely, and I couldn't understand what I had done wrong. But the girl who was standing there, her friend, understood what happened. She said, you know, Rabbi Steinberg is the assistant rabbi here, and together with his wife, they host many of the young people. And she said, oh, and then the conversation continued nicely. What I discovered was that she thought I was expressing an interest. Maybe she wasn't interested in the guy with the big black hat and his tits out, I don't know. But for one moment, all of a sudden, I wasn't myself. I was a single person in the crowd, and I experienced, first of all, from her side, what it's like perhaps to be pursued by someone whom you're not interested in being pursued by, and what it's like to get beyond the receiving end and not feel so welcome. It's enlightening, it's instructive for a moment to be someone else and to see what it feels like. And that's what we have to ask ourselves. What's it like to attend a wedding when one is single? What's it like for an older single to go home to his parents' community, his or her parents' community for Yom Tov? What's it like to be pitied, to be nudged, to be, God forbid, rejected? The dating process, those who are engaged in this process known as dating, the shidduchim process, are at risk of, it's a difficult, difficult process. I remember when I was dating, somebody met me and said, how are things going? How's it going? It happened to have been the week of Parshas Vayishlach. So I thought for a second, I remember the Rashi, when before Yaakov Avinu meets up with his brother Esav, it says, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od, Yaakov was very afraid, Vayitzer Lo, two expressions of being in fear. Vayira, Vayitzer, two words, so Rashi picks up on it and says there were two fears he had. Shema Yehareg, lest he be killed, Esav shouldn't kill him. V'im Yarog Hu Es Acher, he shouldn't kill someone else. When this person asked me the question, I said, sometimes I feel that's what dating is. Person is at risk of being hurt. Nobody wants to be hurt. Nobody wants to hurt anybody else. Trying to develop a relationship, and there's the risk of, God forbid, hurting somebody else, being hurt oneself. And this is a challenge that anyone who is involved in the dating process is exposed to. And when I talk to a single person, I have to be mindful that all the experiences, and many more, that I just depicted for you are experiences that person may have had in the last week, in the last month, and therefore, as Rabbi Yerucham said, we have to ask ourselves, how many times did you roll over back and forth before you fell asleep last night? Now, while the emphasis of what I'd like to do here today is empathy from married people towards singles, but I think it would be instructive and enlightening, there's also a little bit of understanding that has to go in the other direction. I think it's good for us to see examples and their flip sides. A single person has to put himself or herself in the shoes of her married friends. People who are newly married are developing a relationship. It's something that takes work. We just read at the end of this week's Torah reading, Yitzchak Avinu, only after he brought Rivka home, Vayehavel, love is something that develops after marriage, all rumors to the contrary notwithstanding. People are working on developing a bias. There are challenges there. Certainly people with children have certain pressures. Somebody from our minyan, people come with various gifts when they come for Shabbos. Somebody came and brought my wife and me a gift. It was a little certificate that says you were entitled to a night of free babysitting and a little gift certificate to a restaurant. It was the greatest gift we could have. You know, single people should also be aware of the challenges that married people face as well. Now, while the involvement of parents in the shidduchim process really would fall under this heading, since we have an entirely separate workshop on that topic, Miriam Weichner's workshop, so I'm going to touch on that only tangentially, but that really is worthy of its own discussion. But in summation, by way of introduction, I think we have recognized that to fully understand each other, we have to empathize, we have to put ourselves in each other's shoes, and by so doing, we'll come to much greater empathy. So I'd like to focus on a few specific areas of empathy. Empathy in what you say, first of all. Every story I tell you here today is true. There was a chesed project being worked on in our shul, and there were some single girls who were working late into the night on the last night before the deadline to get it completed. And I happened to have been in the shul. We had a concurrent program going on, and I witnessed somebody walked in and said to these girls, they're working late into the night, he said, "Wow, it's a good thing you guys aren't married, because your husbands would never let you stay out this late." If somebody made a contest to think of the most insensitive thing that one could say, I could not have come up with something better. And I want to tell you, the person who said it was not a mean person. He's a person who does a lot of chesed. Just had not bothered to think that it's not just not being married. There are sensitivities that come along with it, and sometimes we don't bother to think of how someone else will feel. So we have to think about empathy and what we say. I have here an article. It's an editor's note from a publication that many people on the West Side may have seen. Also a monthly, I believe, publication. This came out a couple months ago. The editor is someone whom I know. And she writes the following. "A word of advice to anyone speaking at an event geared for young Jews. Don't tell them they are inadequate if they are not married. Particularly, do not say incomplete. It is not good politics. Even if you believe this, do not say it. They may not like you. In fact, they may not ask you back. At a gathering earlier this summer, a rabbi facing a group of 50 or so young unmarried Jews, hope it wasn't me, told them in so many words that they were lacking as human beings until they tied the knot." Okay, she goes on. Later on, she says, "While according to the Torah, one is supposed to get married and have children, it has become the prevailing opinion in many Jewish communities that you have not graduated until adulthood, until married. That means if you are 35, if you're not married, you are not really an adult. You don't even have to buy real furniture or appliances because all of life is simply a way station until you reach the chuppah. How can a person live like this? How many hundreds of thousands of young Jews are out there that are not married? And are they all half people? Still children?" And she goes on, "I think what we should take away from such an article is that there's a great deal of sensitivity in what people hear and what people say. And I would say that when married people, or anyone for that matter, anyone who's engaging in the shidduch process addresses single people, we have to be mindful of the statement in the Gemara Nevamos and Daf Samach Hei. Amar Rabbi Lo, Mishum Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lo says in the name of Rabbi Lezer, son of Rabbi Shimon, Kishem Shem Mitzvah Adam Lomar Davar HaNishma, just as it is a mitzvah upon us, it is incumbent upon us to say things that will be heard, to say things that will be taken to heart, Kach Mitzvah Adam Shelo Lomar Davar She'enu Nishma. Don't say something that will not be heard. A person might have a criticism, might have a constructive criticism, but if I don't express it in a way that the listener will follow, will heed the advice, what is the point of saying it? It can be only hurtful and not beneficial. Rashi says, "D'chsiv hocheach tochiach." You shall rebuke, but a double lashon, as we call it, the word is repeated. L'hochiach mishi mekabel imenu. Be mochiach, somebody who tochiach, who in fact will accept the tochacha, the advice, the criticism. We should be very careful not to say things. We might have a real criticism, but not to say it to something that will not be heard. If we say it in an insensitive way, it will not be taken to heart. Nu, saying nu to a single person. Has anybody ever gotten married because somebody said nu? Unlikely. Or you're standing in a crowd and say, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with her? You know what that means? That means my thoughtless comment is more meaningful and more helpful than everything that you've done till now. That's a tremendous and hurtful statement to say to a single person. However, on the flip side, I think single people should be wary, should be careful not to project ideas into what other people are saying. This Gemara that in this article was alluded to. The Gemara in Yevamos does in fact say, Rabbi Becher mentioned it, Kol Adam She'ein Lo Isha Shari Belo Simcha Belo Bracha Belo Tova, a person who is not married exists without joy, without blessing, without goodness. The Gemara is not making a statement of maturity, of intellectual competence. The Gemara is not saying that a person who is not married is not competent, is not mature. Even though in fact on the coming page the Gemara says, a person who is not married, Eino Adam, is not a person. Shenemar Zachar Unakeva Bra'am Vayikra Shemam Adam. It says in the Torah, God created them Zachar Unakeva, male and female, and then he called them man, which the Gemara makes a drasha. If you're not Zachar Unakeva, if it's not both together, it isn't man. But that statement of the Gemara has to be understood. As all Agada, we have to understand what the Gemara really means to convey to us. The next line of the Gemara says that a person She'ein Lo Karka, Mi She'ein Lo Karka, a person who does not own real estate, Eino Adam, is not a person. Shenemar V'ha'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. He gave the earth to Bnei Adam, which the Gemara makes a drasha. If I don't own earth, if I don't own real estate, I'm also not Adam. The Gemara, I mean, I can relate to that. It means I'm missing out on a basic human pleasure, on a something that people miss when they do not have. It's something that is lacking, but it is not a statement of intellect, of maturity, of competence. It has nothing to do with not buying silverware or being inadequate. If we would need proof, in the same Gemara, the Gemara tells the story of Ben Azai. Ben Azai was one of the great Chachmei HaMishma, the rabbis of the Mishnah. And Ben Azai makes a statement in the Gemara about how important it is to engage in procreation, to have a family, to raise children. And the other rabbis, the Chachmei HaMishnah, are taken aback by his statement. They say to him, Yesh Na'a Doresh, some people are good at teaching, V'na'a Mekayim. And they're good at practicing what they teach. They're people who are good teachers, and they also lead mitzvah observant lifestyles. Yesh makayim ve'eno darish. Some people follow the mitzvahs, but they're not good at conveying it. They're not good at teaching it. They're not good preachers. Avalata, but you're a no darish. You're a good preacher. Ve'eno makayim, but you don't practice what you preach because Ben Azai was single, and not because he hadn't found the right one, because he chose to be single. He did not engage in trying to find a wife. The rabbis ask him, how can you make a statement about the importance of Piriya Varivya, of having a family, when this is not what you do? You don't practice what you preach. Ben Azai responds to them, what can I do? My soul longs for Torah. Ben Azai was a unique type of person who so longed for the study of Torah that he could not take upon himself the exigencies, the stress of having a family, and the Gemara accepts that statement. The Gemara says there's a unique type of person, which, by the way, the Rishonim already tell us that no one today would fall into this category. And the Chachma Sodom, earlier post, can write that if even the greatest student in yeshiva today said, I refuse, I'm such a great Torah scholar that I will not get married, we wouldn't accept that. Everyone has to try. But there is such a thing, and the Rambam writes it, la'halacha, the Rambam does codify it in his code, that if a person is at that level that he cannot leave the books for a moment, cannot take upon himself the yoke of having a family, nafshi chashka b'Torah, that is excusable. Now let us understand. Ben Azai was willing to forego the bracha, the tova, all of the positive things that the previous Gemara talks about, how great marriage is. Do we think that Ben Azai was immature? God forbid. Was he not intellectually developed? Was he not competent? Certainly not. Not only that, the Gemara is willing to take a statement from him on marriage, about Piriya Varivya. It has nothing to do with maturity. It is, as I think we all understand, the Gemara, when the Gemara says that a person is lacking until he or she is married, it's a statement that we can all relate to. It's not a statement of maturity, and we should not look to project into the Gemara or into any other statement that we hear kavanas, intentions that are not there. So therefore, I think it's important for singles also to recognize that everyone who is addressing singles is faced with a difficult challenge. There's a balance. I'll tell you a bit of personal history. I was a goody two-shoes all throughout school. I always wanted the teacher to think I was the best kid, always wanted straight A's, A pluses, and would always do whatever would make the teacher happy, would make them come home with a good report card. But I had a problem. I had fellow students, there were kids in my class, who were not so. They were mischievous, they caused trouble. And I would have teachers who would come in and yell at us. You guys aren't doing well, this is no good, and they would come in and I would be insulted. I'm telling you a true it was a problem for me. Certainly throughout elementary school, I would get insulted. I'm trying my hardest, and she comes in, she yells at us. I was insulted by it until I got a little bit older, a little bit more sophisticated, and I recognized she's not talking to you. If you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, she's not talking to you. The teacher's not yelling at you if you're doing what you're supposed to do. And the same, but why is she saying what she's saying? Because there are other people here who need to hear this. And we have to recognize that whenever a person is addressing a group of singles, there are different groups there. There are different subgroups. There are people there who are trying very hard and struggling, and what those people need is chizuk. They need to be told that just like in any other area of existence, we have nisyonos, we have trials, we have tribulations. God gives us challenges. Lahavdil, a person could be ill, a person could have other pressures in life and difficulties, and we try to deal with them and cope with them in a positive way. There are people there who what they need is chizuk. At the same time, there will be people sitting in the same group who need, you'll excuse me, the proverbial kick in the pants. They need to be told, nope, let's go, let's pursue what's important. And the challenge facing any speaker is that if he leans too much toward one side or the other, on the one hand I can be pouring salt on the wounds of those who are doing everything they should be doing, or I can be reinforcing bad habits. You know, if I'm going to tell somebody he's not doing it, yeah, it's fine, it's good, don't worry, Hashem is with you. I'm reinforcing bad habits. So any speaker, anyone who is addressing singles in the written word or verbally is faced with this challenge, and I think the listener has to be mindful of that. And the next time you're in a big auditorium and somebody is saying something that you think is hurtful, he's coming on too strong, I have a suggestion. Look up at the ceiling. See these lights? You count them. Okay? If one has done an intellectually honest assessment of one's own endeavors and realizes it's not applicable, count the lights. We should not become insulted. We should recognize that any speaker who's talking to a group of people is addressing different needs. Okay. That's empathy in what we say. So married people who are helping out have to be mindful that words can hurt. And as I said, singles should be mindful of the challenge facing the speaker and not be quick to be insulted or to read into what somebody's saying intentions that are not there. More specifically, empathy in setting up and encouraging relationships. Empathy in the shidduchim process. I'd like to tell you a story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. There are many stories of Gedolim, about great leaders that show you how wise a person was, how learned. There are other stories that show you what a Baal Chesed, how kind a person was. But sometimes you get that rare story that shows both. That shows you the brilliance in Chesed, Chochmah in kindness. And this is such a story. There was a fellow who lived in Yerushalayim who was single, was getting on in years. And he had an old sick mother whom he tended to with great, great commitment. She lived in his house, and he spent many hours a day tending to her. It was very difficult. He balanced his job with taking care of her, and he was very, very committed to her. But he was getting older. Some relatives of his said to him, you know, we're sorry to tell you this, but you have to think long term. You're not getting married. And probably the reason is because any girl who knows that this is going to be a burden, if she's going to marry you, this is going to be part of what she's going to have to live with, that is a deterrent. And you have the right to take care of yourself, to make sure you get married. You shouldn't let this time pass by. This could be your window of opportunity. What you have to do, they told him, is put your mother in a home. You'll pay for it. You have the means. Put her in a home and go out and get married. You'll be more marketable and you'll get married. And he was a rational person. He considered that possibility, much as it bothered him. He wanted to tend to the needs of his mother, but he considered it. So he went to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach for counsel. So he told him the story, you know, this is what I do, but my relatives think it's not a good idea. Shlomo Zalman said, do not put your mother in a home. He said, didn't even discuss it, don't put her in a home. He said, I give you a bracha, you'll find someone who will be willing to handle that as well. And he sent him on his way. About 8 months or a year later, he came back, Rebbe, Mazel Tov, I took your advice and I found someone who was willing, despite the fact that I'm taking care of my mother, willing to date me, and we hit it off, and wonderful, we're engaged, we're going to be married in a few months. He said, Mazel Tov, put your mother in a home. Man was astounded, flabbergasted. Shlomo Zalman explained, if you would have dated someone for whom the prerequisite was that she wouldn't have to tend to your mother, you would always have viewed her as the cause for the fact that your mother's in a home and not at home with you. And God forbid, if with time, when the mother would pass away, there would always be that bitterness. This is the cause. This is why her end, her demise, was as such and not the way I wanted it. That would have affected your shalom bias. Therefore, I waited till you would find somebody who was willing to take care of your mother. And now I'm telling you, I, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I'm telling you, put her in a home. And now you can't blame it on her. Your shalom bias will be secured forever. Again, it's a mice, it's a story. We shouldn't rule on any similar situation based on a story. It may have depended on personalities and so on. But I think we see the chachma, the wisdom of a gadol b'Yisrael to understand. And what we should learn from this story is that we should be looking. We who are here to help the single community should be looking not just to get people married, but to get them happily married. It's an important consideration. It's not just to push things along, but to consider long-term, as Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach did. And of course, obviously, a part of that is, and we were originally going to have a whole workshop on this, is to set people up. It goes without saying, even in the modern Orthodox community, we're finding more and more, even where people do know other people, when there's somebody who says, you go out with him, you go out with her, it gives it more of a focus, and therefore setting people up is very, very important. Even he knows her, suggest it anyway, push it through, but again, with seichel, not just because this is a boy, this is a girl, they're both tall, they're both short, same age, but to foresee and make sure to see that you think it's really appropriate, give it thought. And on the flip side, I think what singles should consider in this area, in this heading, under this topic, have empathy, think about what went into a shidduch idea. Sometimes a single person gets called up by someone else, has an idea, and it's way off. It's almost insulting. Sometimes it is insulting. But one should not be quick to react. Think about what probably went into this. Do you know, sometimes before I call someone with a shidduch idea, I've made 7 or 8 phone calls. Very often you know one side and the other person you don't know as well. You've heard of him, you've heard of her, you know somebody else who might know him, you make a phone call to this one, leave a message, and that one. Very often before, and I'm sure the shadchanim know this very well, before you actually suggest a shidduch, there's a lot of work that's gone into it. A single person who receives a phone call, even if the idea is way off, it's not appropriate, it's missing the baseline criteria, the core ingredients, but think about what went into that. Think about how much effort went into it. Be appreciative. In my experience, by the way, I've never encountered anyone who hasn't been appreciative. People always say, thank you for thinking of me, and so on, even if the shidduch idea was not a good idea. Most often, some of them have gone out already, in my experience. But people are appreciative. But sometimes when a person is not appreciative, it sends a negative message to the shadchan. It discourages further participation, further help. So therefore, be appreciative of the efforts involved, and also be appreciative of the thought process. If something was suggested that was not a good idea, why? Don't just be insulted. Why did she suggest, why did he suggest this person who's not appropriate for me? I had a Rebbe in yeshiva. I was fortunate to have had a Rosh Yeshiva who was well known for producing lamdanim. If I would have stayed there a little longer, maybe I'd be a lamdan. But he was well known for teaching people how to think. There are many people who are great scholars, can impart a lot of knowledge, but he has a reputation of teaching people how to think analytically, rationally, be lamdonim. And somebody once visited our yeshiva who came over to me and said, you know, I heard that so-and-so, this rabbi, is known to produce lamdonim. I want to see, how is that? What's he about? And I said, so come observe. So it was right at the end of a shir, and there were some students gathered around the Rebbe, and he had just completed the shir, and somebody asked a question. The Rebbe closed his eyes. All kinds of faces of intense thinking going on. You could see the smoke coming out of his ears. A lot of cheshbonos, a lot of thoughts going on in his mind. And after about 90 seconds of total silence, he began to answer the question. And what was remarkable about this scene was that it was a silly question. It was a dumb question. Anybody who had even a moderate understanding of the Gemara knew the answer to that question. So I explained to this person who was observing, I said, he's not thinking about the answer to the question. He's trying to figure out what premises did this person have that could make him ask such a question. When we address a question, we shouldn't address the question. We should address the premises behind the question. If somebody, and this applies to many areas of life, but if somebody suggests a shidduch or gives advice in a shidduch situation that you think is off the mark, don't just react. Don't react emotionally. Try to stop and think for 10 seconds or 90 seconds. What is behind this? What motivated this comment, this suggestion, this question? And that will stand us in much better stead. So just to recap, we've spoken about empathy means envisioning life as the other person, not just say, oh, this person isn't married, but to think about all of that, what that entails on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, what it means during the chagim, during the holidays, what experiences does this person have? What's it like to be dating? Some of us forget very quickly what it was like in our own experiences, and we should think about it. And on the flip side, singles should have realistic expectations from their married friends in terms of time constraints, in terms of the pressures of married life. Okay. In the area of empathy and what we say, we should think before we speak, good rule for life, and recognize the sensitivities that single people will have. And on the other side, the singles should understand the balance that's facing anybody who's trying to address singles. There are different groups there, and it's hard to balance everything at once. And then in the actual process of facilitating shidduchim, as I said, we should seek the true good, not what feels good, not feel good chesed. Oh, I made a shidduch, I made a cool. Really think about things before we suggest things, as Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach did. And as I said, singles should think about what motivated a question, not be quick to react, be appreciative, and make sure that appreciation is expressed clearly. In conclusion, I would say that empathy is the difference between a child and an adult. I teach a few periods a week in a local day school, and I think anybody who's a teacher knows that children sometimes can be very cruel. They can play a prank on a friend, can say something that a few years later you're confident they would never say. When they would be adults, they would never do such a thing. But the children don't have that empathy. Empathy is germane to adulthood. It's something that develops from being able to say, hey, how would I feel if I were in that situation? It's the difference between a child and an adult. The Torah says in the beginning of the book of Shmos, Vayigdal Moshe vayetzel echa vayarbis evlosa. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went from childhood to adulthood, it says he went out among his brethren, vayarbis evlosam. He saw how the Jews were being afflicted in Egypt. Rashi, a famous Rashi, says, Nosan eno velibo lios meter aleihem. He applied himself. He took a good look and applied his heart to sympathize, even though he wasn't subjected to that affliction, but to understand what they were experiencing. What word does the Torah use for that maturity? Vayigdal Moshe. He became a gadol. He became big. To have empathy is to be a big person. So I would conclude, let us all be gadolim. Let us be big people and thereby bring greater unity in our community, greater sensitivity and support to those who need it. And as a result of this heightened awareness, may we bring about many simchas, much happiness. We should all share together in many simchas. If anybody wants to speak to me after the session, it would be my pleasure to meet you. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Okay.
Do you want to keep it on? I'll
ask it. Okay, a question, yeah.
My name is Michael Feldstein. I've been very happily married for 21 years, and I do try to do as much as I can for singles that I know. And one of the challenges that I've faced is, on the one hand, there are many singles who do appreciate the involvement that I have in terms of inviting them to Shabbos meals or getting them up on potential dates.
Right.
On the other hand, I do feel there's another side to it where many singles feel, you know, don't have pity on me, treat me like an adult. I don't really, you know, need your sympathy or even empathy. I mean, I think it's a feeling that that I get where they'd just rather be left alone and they want to do things on their own. How do you balance that challenge? Is that something that you see with the many singles that you've encountered, you know, on the website and also people?
Okay, so the question is really how to deal with people who don't seem receptive to our efforts. This is a big problem, and yes, it certainly does exist. It exists everywhere, and I'm sure anyone who's involved will experience it. As I said, there is that element of mitzvah not to say a davar she'eino nishma. If I make the assumption that somebody wants to get married and operate under that assumption, but that's a false assumption, so everything I do from that point on is not going to be of any use. If a person is not looking to get married, then that's a problem that has to be addressed earlier on, and not everyone will be able to do that. I think we should still be friendly and warm and so on, but if a person is not motivated to get married, and sometimes there can be issues that are really require professional help, and you have to be mindful of that. We deal with a large segment of people that can be issues that are beyond our expertise, but sometimes a one-on-one conversation, which again is done with sympathy and with understanding, can convince someone. But if you find the person is not receptive, there's not very much you can do. And it's not a good idea to try, because the more you push, the further you're going to push them away sometimes. And sometimes it's a mitzvah to recognize that what I'm doing won't be helpful. When someone is motivated, but you think there are flaws in one's mindset, so that has to be dealt with sensitively. Sometimes you have to tell a personal story about yourself that isn't true. Look, I once did this on a date, and that's what happened. And say, oh, he has the same flaw, I'll correct that flaw. It has to be done sensitively. But when someone is motivated and needs guidance is where you can work with them. But if you don't make it to that first base, then it's a whole different story. And I think pushing would be counterproductive sometimes, yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.